dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for, well, an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. A very important, indeed very active front in that war at the moment is our southern border. A man who hails from that part of the country is our first guest. He is Congressman Randy Weber. He represents the people of the 14th District of Texas, a little further to the east from where the border is being now penetrated massively by hordes of unaccompanied illegal alien children and others. But he's on the case, and he's working in the Congress of the United States to see what can be done to stop this invasion and to send back from where they came those who are now coming, as I say, in large numbers and with various implications, which we'll talk about with Congressman Weber now. Congressman, welcome. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Well, thank you, Frank. Good to be with you. And you are correct. I do hail from a little bit northeast of the actual border. I'm on the Gulf of Mexico there on the Texas side, but I will tell you that I was vice chairman of the Borders Committee my last term in the Texas legislature, so I'm thoroughly familiar with it.
Well, I know you're, as I say, very much steeped in the problem. The problem is one that is afflicting your state writ large and indeed a lot of other states besides. In fact, somebody's pointed out that with the administration's efforts to move these folks around, every state is a border state at this point. But talk a little bit, if you would, Congressman, about how we got to this pass. How is it that we have now had since October, by some estimates, 50,000 unaccompanied young people, some of them not so children, but large numbers of them and others who are coming across what we were assured is a border more secure than ever?
Well, yeah, that's what the president said, especially when he went to El Paso. And of course, that's what Janet Napolitano said when she was head of the Homeland Security Agency. But here's the truth of the matter. Texas's border has been open for a long time. Governor Perry has been imploring the federal government to do something about it. President Obama, of course, we're now victims in some fashion of mass media, social media, because if all the people have to do is listen to his rhetoric, to his policies, to his discussion that's coming out of the White House and his administration to understand that there is an open for business for immigration sign, illegal and otherwise, whether it's drugs, whether it's undocumented, and of course, obviously the legal kind too. But the president's stance on the porous border has been like a magnet for these things, Frank, and you're seeing the result of that.
There's no question in your mind about that, Congressman. The administration is insisting that no, this is all about violence in their home countries. But you're saying, and it certainly sounds right to me, that you can't have the problem without the kind of magnet that we've seen attracting these folks that the administration created.
If you track the president's remarks on June 30th about immigration, you know, he made the claim that we're sending most of those kids back. But if you do a fact check, and we've talked amongst some of my colleagues that have been in Congress longer than I have and been working the immigration issue, and they said from the federal level that actually about 70% of them stay. Those kids come here, they go to homes of relatives, and truth be known, probably most of those are illegals as well. And they say, here, you know, you got a court case here, show up in whatever, 3, 4, 5, 6 months. 70% of those people never make the first court appearance. They disappear into the interior of the country.
Yeah. And this isn't a surprise to us. We've known this is the pattern in this whole sort of, well, I think of it as fraud that's been perpetrated on the American people, that we give them a court date and expect them to come back when we have every reason to believe they won't.
Well, and that's the truth of the matter. A lot of people say, well, these are kids. We ought to be welcoming them with open arms. But what I tell people, Frank, is, look, we cannot afford to take care of all the kids that we have here. It is time to put America first. It is time that we took care of those that are here legally and those who were born here, and all this feel-good stuff about, well, let's and as judge, was it Hainer down in the valley said, you know, we're basically aiding and abetting human trafficking. The federal government is human trafficking because, you know, the coyotes bring these people across illegally. And what do the federal agents do? They pick them up and they transport them further inland. They're actually aiding in human smuggling.
They are indeed enabling it. It's certainly at a minimum. And definitely, as you say, Congressman Randy Weber, attracting more of it. And this is the thing. I listen to some of these folks and you can understand where they're coming from. They want you to feel, as I think we all do, sympathy for these young people. Not all of them, again, are young people. But where does it end? If you were to really open the door and accommodate all these people, as some of those on the border, do-gooder type communities are saying, where would it end?
Well, here's the thing. I don't know if you're aware, but I filed a bill that literally takes away the foreign aid from the four countries, Mexico, Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala. And, Frank, you have to know that it doesn't matter whose numbers you use. Some people say kids is unaccompanied minors, young as 4, 5, 6, 8. Well, you know, 10, 12, it doesn't really matter. You can't tell me that these kids are making their way all the way up from Guatemala, El Salvador, and they're not having some kind of orchestrated, coordinated effort, and that the Mexican authorities, for example, are just turning a blind eye. And what my bill says is, look, we're going to shut down your foreign aid, except for the war on drugs and the war on human trafficking. We'll continue to send that. But my bill would shut down all foreign aid to those four countries until their government got involved and said, okay, we are going to work on stemming this tide. Because we know that they're complicit.
This is really the crux of the matter. I'm so glad you've mentioned that you've put Mexico in your bill, the Illegal Entry Accountability Act of 2014. It's H.R. 5014. Because none of this could be happening if Mexico were not allowing these people to come across their southern border and migrate all the way up to ours. Mexico has rather vigorous, shall we say, immigration laws of its own. So this is clearly a case where either through corruption or some other agenda, they are in turn enabling this invasion of our country as well. So I think you're absolutely right to punish them.
Well, and that's exactly my aim, because I will tell you, Frank, that whether they're turning a blind eye, I mean, come on, how brilliant do you have to be to see 50, 60 kids with two or three adults working their way north to say, hey, that's kind of unusual. So either they're complicit or, as you've said, they're getting money under the table, the corruption. Neither one of those is good. And so I say to them, if you want to get the government's attention, let's hit them where it counts in the back pocket. Let's withhold funding and get their attention.
Let me ask you, Congressman, because of your committee responsibilities, you have, among other things, in the House Government Foreign Affairs Committee, you're the vice chairman of the Subcommittee on Africa, Global Health, Global Human Rights and International Organizations. The health piece of this and the threat that this represents to public safety in the United States is something it doesn't seem to me has gotten nearly enough attention. Would you talk a little bit about what you're seeing and your colleagues on the southwestern border are experiencing now, as well as what's happening elsewhere in the country as a result of these coming in with unquestionably various medical conditions that are of very serious concern?
Well, absolutely. I heard on the radio, was it yesterday or was it this morning, that the days run together sometimes, that there's been confirmed. Now, listen, let me back up and preface that by saying this. When I was the vice chairman of the Borders Committee in the Texas legislature, the DPS told us that there are 70 Eastern religious sects, S-E-C-T-S, 70 religious sects, Middle East religion sects, coming across our porous border. Steve McCraw, director of the Texas DPS, told me personally, Representative Weber, we don't know who all is coming across that border because it's so porous. And then you couple that with the fact that I heard on the radio this morning, or maybe yesterday, that there's been two confirmed cases of TB, tuberculosis, and either one or two confirmed cases. I believe it's swine flu, H1N1. They actually have a name for it.
Avian flu, maybe. It's one or the other. Yeah.
That's right. And so, you know, we're thinking these are diseases we have eradicated in our country, and our population isn't ready for this. And so for this to break out and be an epidemic or pandemic, as you mentioned earlier, would be unbelievable, a bad sidebar to this already severely bad saga that's unfolding in front of our very eyes. So it is a health issue. People ought to wake up and say, look, I don't want my children around it. I don't want them in my community. And let me just add as a side note, there's a couple of communities in my district, League City being one last night, League City City Council, begin work on a resolution, maybe even an ordinance that said no housing of those illegals in League City because they don't want that exposure.
It's entirely understandable, and we appreciate what you're doing in the Congress of the United States, Congressman Randy Weber, to try to prevent this from metastasizing further. Your Illegal Entry Accountability Act is a very important piece of legislation. We wish you every success with it. I hope you'll come back and report on how it's going and what we can do to help. In the meantime, thank you, sir, for your service to our country. Keep it up and stay vigilant.
All right. Thank you, Frank.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon, sir. Thank you.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
On August 2nd, 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
Debbie Lee became a Gold Star mom that day.
And it started a lifelong mission of her own. In Mark's honor, Debbie founded America's Mighty Warriors.
Dedicated to supporting the troops and their families.
AMW educates the public through speaking engagements, rallies, and events to raise awareness and appreciation of our military.
AMW advocates for the troops.
Funding, rules of engagement, benefits. AMW is committed to being a voice for justice for our troops. AMW serves Gold Star families. Retreats, concerts, special events.
Good things to remind the families they're not forgotten.
America's Mighty Warriors.
Nonprofit.
Dedicated to the troops and their families.
Donations are tax deductible.
Log on to americasmightywarriors.org.
Find out how you can help.
The best of America deserves our best. Log on today.
americasmightywarriors.org.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.americanfreedomlawcenter.org.
Hello, I'm Gary Sinise. It's been 20 years since Forrest Gump, and the story of Lieutenant Dan's triumphant return to normalcy is still a part of my life. I'm honored to share it with the real-life Lieutenant Dan's living among us, the more than 1,700 battle-injured amputees that have returned home since 9/11. As citizens, it's our duty to ensure these heroes get the care they need. Join the Gary Sinise Foundation and help support America's wounded heroes. Visit GarySiniseFoundation.org.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Back. We're joined by Diana West, the syndicated columnist and best-selling author with whom we have the privilege of visiting each week. Her most recent book, of course, is American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can find her writings, among other places, at dianawest.net. Diana, welcome. It's always good to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank.
Let's start with some musing you've been doing about this border insecurity issue. We were speaking with Congressman Weber about it in the first block, but I'm very keen to get your sense of what's actually going on here, Diana. Why are these young people coming here, and who benefits from their being here?
Well, I think that this is a question that certainly Congress should be getting to the bottom of. We all see what the various incentives offered that draw them. We see evidence that they are being essentially solicited. We see evidence that they are certainly being accommodated by the federal government. They are being enabled. They are being transported. We have a federal government now engaged essentially in human trafficking of aliens, children, minors. I mean, the program in progress is the complete destruction. I mean, sovereignty went a long time ago. This is just the destruction of the fabric of the nation that's underway now. And just in terms of what this means, it is impossible to avoid noticing that any kind of bloc coming from Central America, a Hispanic bloc coming from Mexico and Central America, will be a Democratic bloc. I mean, we have to look down the line here, and it will be a very pro-big government bloc, and we know this. Because we actually have polling on Hispanic attitudes towards government from the most recent presidential elections, and we see that 3 out of 4 Hispanics in the United States believe our government is not big enough and that the government does not do enough. So we are looking at a recipe essentially for completing the socialization of America, the complete destruction of the republic and a replacement with a socialist system.
Another act of betrayal against our country, in other words. Diana West is our guest, syndicated columnist, best-selling author, and you've just been talking about sort of baby Democrats being spawned by this invasion of our southern border, Diana. The president is now demanding that some $4 billion be provided to him by Congress to help, as he puts it, manage this humanitarian crisis. What is it that, in fact, that money is likely to be used for, in your estimation?
Perhaps creating permanent refugee camps, all of the Palestinians, in after the Israeli War for Independence, going back 70 years. I mean, it sounds fanciful, and yet there is no interest. There is only disinterest in actually stopping the problem or returning these aliens to their countries of origin. Such massive amounts of money are part of the entrenchment of this problem and indeed the expectation or the preparation for it to continue. I mean, we're staggered by the numbers now, 50,000. I mean, in terms of families, the New York Times was recently actually stated a couple of days ago that we're looking at something close to 300,000 people have actually been settled around the country in this recent round of migration, of busting through the border. I mean, the figures are staggering, but they will only increase. And so this is where you see these massive sums of money. We see government contractors getting fat. We see a group called Southwest Key serving as a facilitator and builder of facilities for these people, for example. I think they have at least 17 of these facilities at this time. This group, the chairman of its board, is a member of La Raza. I mean, this is the kind of thing that needs to be broken down and understood as not simply a humanitarian response, but a political assault using children from other countries to destroy the population of this country.
Right. Well, at least destroy the society of which they are a part, that's for sure. And La Raza, of course, is a radical Hispanic organization committed to leftist policies and, as you say, very much big government. So feathering their nest is almost certainly going to be a formula for, again, facilitating the further onslaught of these invaders, some of whom are young, it should be said, but some of whom are not. And a great many others are taking advantage of this invasion to penetrate our borders in other areas while the Border Patrol is coping with this particular so-called humanitarian crisis. There is this issue. I heard Mark Krikorian talking about it with Bill Bennett earlier today. Mark, of course, is with the Center for Immigration Studies, Diana West. And he made the observation that goes sort of to your point about the larger political agenda here, that it doesn't appear as though these refugees, as they're billed by the administration, or illegal aliens, as I think they're correctly described, are being settled in red states with Democrats up for re-election in the United States Senate. If that's true, and I'm sure Mark is correct about that, does that surprise you?
No, because the whole thing is a politically calibrated effort. I mean, the thing that drives me absolutely berserk is the fact that Congress is doing nothing about it. They could stop money that goes to HHS that is going toward this resettlement effort, these terrible entrenchment of the problem. They could stop the money to these centers that come right from the taxpayer that are creating this permanent situation. They are doing nothing but venting. I mean, you have Representative Bridenstine, for example, barred from visiting one of these centers in his own state. And he issued a very stern press release, and I think he has gone back and so on. However, that is not any kind of an effective means of dealing with it. There should be essentially a war council of concerned representatives. They would almost entirely be Republicans, but they should absolutely take charge of the purse and their own powers in terms of trying to check a government that is not just run amok. I mean, you know, it's sort of past that. It is a government that is now absolutely acting against the interests of this sovereign nation. And the people with the power to do anything about it, who are in Congress, our representatives, are essentially doing nothing but issuing press releases. And it's not going to change anything.
Diana West, you know, it reminds me of one other piece of this, which is not only the assault on our sovereignty and, you know, the implications of this sort of democratic population boom, I guess you might call it, but also the possibility that along with these invaders come apparently diseases that are now being disseminated around the United States, and more may come from this. So it speaks to this larger issue of an indifference to public safety as well as the national security.
Or a desire to create havoc in public safety. That is also a very viable possibility. If you have diseases, if you have outbreaks, this gives the federal government yet another opportunity to flex its muscles and control us.
Let alone if people respond, as some have to date, by resisting what's going on. It's an opportunity for an excuse for a crackdown of some kind. Diana, just in a minute, can I ask you very quickly your thoughts on what's going on in Israel at the moment and the implications for us if we pursue this as a sort of exercise in moral equivalence?
Well, you know, these are dire implications for the existence of Israel. And, you know, again, it's a very different kind of assault on sovereignty, but it is, again, another kind. It is another instance of the same sort of attack on allies, on American ideals, on American allies. I mean, it's sort of, they're strong parallels, as different as the situations are. But this is certainly part of the Obama administration's animus and program against Israel, just as it is at home, a desire to fundamentally transform this country. I mean, it's part of the same war on Western civilization.
Right. The war for the free world, I call it. And unfortunately, the Obama administration does seem to be very much on the wrong side. Yeah. Diana, we have to let it go at that, I'm sorry to say. Come back to us next week. And thank you for all the work you do. DianaWest.net is the easiest place to find her collected works. And check out, of course, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. Diana, we'll talk with you again soon. Next up, we'll be speaking with Stuart Poole-Robb about Stuxnet 2.0. Dragonfly coming to a theater near you straight ahead.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Barack Obama visits Texas today, but not its border areas. He's not interested in evidence that his policies have encouraged an ongoing invasion by tens of thousands of illegal child and other aliens. The president just wants Congress to give him nearly $4 billion to manage the resulting crisis. Unfortunately, he would spend much of it in ways that will encourage more such invaders to come here. For example, lots of this emergency funding would go to provide housing, food, transportation, and lawyers for the illegal aliens. These would be inducements for further invasion. Congress should just say no to such spending and ensure that the countries enabling the invasion, namely Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, and Mexico, are not eligible for our foreign aid until they stop it and repatriate the invaders. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to introduce for the first time to our audience Stuart Poole Robb, a man who has considerable experience in the intelligence community on the other side of the pond in the United Kingdom. He is the founder and CEO of KCS Group, a strategic intelligence and corporate security firm. Formerly was with the Royal Air Force and is the co-author with Alan Bailey of Risky Business, Corruption, Fraud, Terrorism, and Other Threats to Global Business. Stuart, welcome. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Yeah, good day to you.
Thank you. Well, we're very keen to get your sense of something that has developed about which I don't know very much, and I don't think the rest of us are very aware of yet either, but I gather you've been giving some considerable thought to. It's been branded Dragonfly. I think of it as kind of a Stuxnet 2.0 malware or something that has some rather ominous overtones to it. Talk a little bit about what is known about this business?
With great respect to the press and the media, all of these things do make for good coverage, and they do attract listeners and readers. The problem that we have is that not a huge amount is known within the public domain about the seriousness of the cyber threat, or the cyber epidemic as we view it from on this side of the pond, as you put it. Things like Dragonfly, which is named by Symantec, I believe, are pieces of malware created and developed for a particular purpose. And do they pose a serious threat? Yes, they do. It's quite easy to see today with the advancements that are occurring how a state actor with unlimited funds can create malware and cause havoc. If they can control a ship, a plane, and a car, it's that not far away from the step where they can control an energy plant or a utility. We saw that with Stuxnet, with the Israelis and the Americans against the nuclear plants, and we're seeing it in other areas, yes. The energy company E.ON had an exploit sitting in its system for 9 months before it was detected. And that information was flooding back to a state actor in Shanghai. What we're seeing now, I believe, is effectively, and whilst one can't be 100% sure, if you're looking at the timings of the operations that are taking place by the attackers, or with the item referred to as Dragonfly, they're working in normal working hours. And that's no different than the Chinese state actor. In this case, we're looking at a Russian state actor. And I think we're looking at FAPSI, which is, I suppose, the equivalent of UK GCHQ, or in your case, NSA.
So you're convinced, Stuart Poole-Robb?
I wouldn't say convinced. I would say that all the signs, all the indicators, point to state involvement here.
Okay. State involvement, and you think it's Russia, and their involvement could be targeting the electric grids or utilities of countries on both sides of the Atlantic. And you've used a term that I'm not familiar with. I think it's self-explanatory, perhaps, but just to be precise, exploit, meaning that there's a device that goes in and allows you not simply to control a given system, but to garner all kinds of information from it, I take it.
Yes, malware comes in many different forms. It can be relatively simplistic, just trying to infect something and bring something down, or it can go in and gather intelligence and come out, or it can carry out a particular attack that's already been pre-programmed. In other words, they've given a set of instructions, it goes in, it does what it's told to do, and then sends that information out or closes that system down and then dissipates. It's gone.
Stuart Poole-Robb, do we even know what's on these computers?
A lot of people actually, I've heard it said, in fact this morning I heard it said by somebody who I attended a meeting with, that all of this is hype and in short it's a load of rubbish. The reality is you do not know with some of the more sophisticated exploits exactly what's sitting in your system or when it's going to be activated. There's only certain types of advanced specialized threat analysis and penetration equipment around that can actually detect this stuff. And it has to effectively go looking for it. I mean, you could have had something sitting in your system since January of this year, and it's sitting there idly, but your system's still working okay until somebody triggers it. But unless you actually physically go back to the period in January and start trawling through the files, I mean, you are aware that you can deliver exploits through social media. You can physically put them in sticks. You can deliver them in Trojans on mails. There's all sorts of ways you can deliver this stuff. And that's the problem. It's ignorance on the one side. It's lack of awareness on the other. But is it a threat? Yes, it is. It's a very serious threat.
We're speaking with Stuart Poole-Robb. He is the co-author of Risky Business, Corruption, Fraud, Terrorism, and Other Threats to Global Business, and founder and CEO of KCS Group, a strategic intelligence and corporate security firm in the United Kingdom and elsewhere. This whole problem of so-called Dragonfly was first brought to my attention on the margins of a meeting, interestingly enough, in London last week, a summit convened by a group called the Electric Infrastructure Security Council. And it came on the heels of basically 2 days of very intensive conversations with government officials and legislators and industry executives and regulators from many countries, including the United States and the United Kingdom, Stuart. And I think what was unmistakable in the course of those conversations was the degree of vulnerability of the electric grid, whether it's to this sort of cyber penetration, exploitation, disruption, or whether it's, electromagnetic pulse or physical attacks or the solar phenomenon of a large coronal mass ejection. I guess I would just invite you to talk a little bit, if you would, about what it might mean. Where one of the other things, maybe start with Dragonfly, but one of the other of these hazards or threats to eventuate to the extent that the grid goes down and stays down in any of our countries.
Well, I think you saw that in America not that long ago. You had your grid went down for quite some time. I do not know what official reason was given, but I have heard rumors as to the It was the fact that it was actually brought down by an attack of a similar nature to this. How true that is, I don't know. That's gossip, and that perhaps is not something we should be getting ourselves involved in. But I do know that there are countries out there that have spent a huge amount of money on developing sophisticated intelligence exploits that can gather information, and that can also do a lot of damage. More recently, I think it was last year, the beginning of last year, or maybe the previous year, you saw Saudi Aramco close down for 5.5 hours. Production stopped. And you saw something in the order of 2,000 laptops fried, physically brought to a stop. Now, whether that is the Iranian saber rattling to say, look, guys, we're here too. You play games with us, we're going to play with you. I don't know. But it certainly came from Iran, and it was certainly a very effective message. Now, we've seen other messages of that type, too. As I indicated to you earlier in this interview, we saw E.ON with an exploit sitting in its system for 9 months. Absolutely frightening. How many other energy companies, utility companies, actually have exploits sitting there waiting to do this sort of damage? And the problem you have today is that the social media system is providing so many outlets or portals, if you like. Look at it the other way around. It provides me a doorway to get into your system and to gather the information I need to be able to deliver a particular exploit. That's the problem. It's the lack of awareness and the lack of knowledge and not being aware that because you've got nothing important on your system, you don't have to spend time protecting it. If you don't protect your system, the very fact that you happen to know the project manager in charge of the utility unit down the road who you communicate with quite regularly, and the people can bounce something through your system onto his. In other words, they've got through your weak security and through his difficult security by accessing him through you. That's the problem we have.
It is the problem we have. I must say I'm unaware of a protracted blackout here in the United States caused by anything, but I certainly think it is a possibility in the future. And Stuart Poolrub, we need to stay in touch with you on this and appreciate tremendously your insights. Thank you for the work you're doing at KCS Group in the United Kingdom, and I hope you'll continue to keep us apprised as this very troubling story concerning Dragonfly and much more continues to develop. Next up, we'll be speaking with Admiral Ace Lyons, former Commander-in-Chief Pacific Fleet, about the threats that we're facing from Iran and more right after this.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
A reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them,
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around.
And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Frank Gaffney. Something is seriously wrong when the FBI interviews a jihadist like Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older of the two Chechens believed to have perpetrated the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and sees no evil. Yet, that is the predictable result of the shackling of the Bureau that has taken place in recent years. For example, in 2011, the Obama administration actually purged FBI training materials of information that warns of the connection between the Tsarnaev's kind of religious fervor and terrifying acts of jihad. And Team Obama has also effectively told the Bureau it must get the approval of Muslim Brotherhood operatives before it can do any such training in the future. This is a formula for much more jihad in America. It's time to free the FBI so that they can do their job and protect our country. If you agree, go to www.freethefbi.com. That's www.freethefbi.com. Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
It is a great privilege to have back with us a distinguished military officer and great American. He is Admiral James Ace Lyons, the former commander-in-chief of the Pacific Fleet. He is currently the president and CEO of Lyons Associates. He is also, I'm pleased to say, the chairman of the Center for Security Policy's Military Committee and generally utility infielder on matters involving national security for the Washington Times and for many others as well. Admiral, welcome back. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Nice to be here, Frank.
You have spent much of your life, particularly your distinguished military career, but also the years since you retired from the Navy, focused on Iran, a nation that from basically 1979 on has been at war with us. It is ever much the case that it is today at war with us as well, and yet we have this spectacle of the Obama administration negotiating with these guys in the expectation that they will somehow slow or, more to the point, stop the nuclear ambitions of Iran. What make you of those negotiations at this point, based on what we've seen over the past 6 months?
These negotiations are a fool's errand. No country in the world has spent the billions of dollars that Iran has spent to build underground nuclear facilities for a peaceful program. I mean, the administration is delusionary if they think that's what Iran is after, a peaceful program. And in fact, everything they've done is in the opposite direction. In fact, there's a new book out, Time to Attack, by a former assistant secretary under Gates, by Matthew Koenig, who says the only option to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon is we must attack at least four of their sites.
Yeah, and you've raised a very important point, Admiral, and that is the underground facilities that Iran has built to conceal as well as protect what they are doing in this nuclear weapons program of theirs. Do we even know with precision where all of these centrifuges or other facilities dedicated to operationalizing nuclear weapons are in Iraq, let alone have, at the moment, any prospect that they'll be shut down in these negotiations?
Well, I think we have a fairly good handle on the on where the sites are located. What we don't have a good handle on are the what's been going on in a number of those sites, the secret experiments and so forth that have been conducted there and have been kept from the international inspectors.
Right. Admiral, you were, of course, Commander-in-Chief of the Pacific Fleet at the time when the Iranians attacked facilities with murderous effect in Lebanon, and you have been watching over the years how they have persisted in this kind of behavior of active, aggressive, murderous attacks against Americans, including most recently our service personnel in Iraq and Afghanistan. And yet they continue, it seems, not just in the course of these negotiations, but more generally, to be given a pass. I had on the program on Monday Ken Timmerman, who's got a new book out, Dark Forces, which talks about not only the Iranian involvement in 9/11, which he's done a lot of very important investigative work on, but also in Benghazi. You've served on the Citizens Commission on Benghazi. Does that sound right to you, that the Iranians were involved in the effort to murder our ambassador and others there back on September 11th, 2012?
That is one theory. I've read Ken Timmerman's book. We don't have, let's say, that hard evidence that I've seen so far that supports that. But putting that aside, Frank, Iran has been responsible for thousands of American deaths and lives that have gone on for over 34 years. And we should never forget Iran's involvement in the material training and support they gave to the 9/11 hijackers. They were found guilty in the New York Federal District Court by Judge Daniels for their support to the 9/11 hijackers when they blew up our Marine barracks, killing 241 of our finest military personnel. I was the deputy chief in that then. I had the planes loaded. I was working with Bill Casey at CIA. We had the planes loaded. We were ready to strike, and we were prevented from striking, which would have wiped out the entire Islamic Amal, a subgroup under Hezbollah at the Sheikh Abdullah barracks, prevented from carrying out that strike by our own Secretary of Defense. We could have changed the course of history. Not then, but also in a number of other cases. It hasn't mattered whether it's been a Democratic or a Republican administration. We have always found a reason not to strike Iran. It is really troubling to me, as it should be. Terrorist state exists. Don't forget, they are the world's recognized leader in state-sponsored terrorism.
Yeah. And, Admiral, as you know so well, one of the doubly damnable features of this kind of conduct on our part is not only have we failed to respond and punished those engaged in this kind of terrorist attacks upon us, but we've emboldened them further by the perception that we won't. And that they must, under their doctrine of Sharia, redouble the effort to make us feel subdued, as the Quran says, when we engage in that kind of submissive behavior, or what at least they perceive to be submissive behavior. Admiral, let me quickly turn to Iraq, another place where Iran has been very actively involved. Ken argues in his book that the Iranians have, in fact, penetrated the Iraqi government under Maliki for quite some time. Do you believe that we should, at this point, be coming to the aid of Maliki and the Iranians that back him up in sort of a joint opposition to the so-called Islamic State within the Sunni areas of Iraq?
Well, I don't agree with that at all. What Iraq is the fractured state. You know, Shiam is no surprise. Its fundamental historical foundation was always weak. It was created in 1920 by the British and French after World War I as they carved up the old Ottoman Empire. So what has happened today, it's descended into a Sunni-Shiite civil war. And I would not expend one more American life to support any government led by Maliki, and that is under the influence of Iran. However, we do have another potential ally that can come out of that troubled situation, and that is Kurdistan, who has really taken on the Islamic State and prevented them from taking over the oil-rich Kirkuk oil fields and the surrounding cities and towns. In fact, they're now maintaining a defensive posture of over 620 miles long, keeping the Islamic State from expanding further to the east.
That is a good thing indeed. We will explore with you, I trust, in the future, Admiral, some of the geostrategic implications of an independent Kurdistan. But I thank you very much both for your time today and for your tremendous service to our country, past, present, and future. We appreciate it, and we look forward to talking with you again soon. We look forward to talking to the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.